town or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes a secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. A world dismissed as conspiracy by those who want to keep its secrets hidden, exposing the dangers, denials, and deceptions. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the third and final hour of this Hagman Report. Yes, we're out of here. Hang on. Folks, hold on a second. Go ahead.
Yeah. Wait a minute. I wanted to make the announcement back into content.
Yeah, folks, have you gotten your Minuteman stove? Why not? Huh?
We've been getting lots of great feedback from people who have purchased the Minuteman Rocket Stove. Folks, go to MinutemanStove.com. There you can check out their excellent put together ammo can stove. Now, don't let my words and way of articulating it take away from the actual product. This ammo can is reinforced with 1/8-inch steel. It is welded components in there to have a burner and the ability to be used with wood and dry kindling. Liquid fire starters needed.
Let me pick this up, all right? Because we Joe, ahead. simply, you and I, the owner came to us and said, you know, would you endorse and sponsor, you know? And we said, well, send us one. Let us use it. Let us try it out. Because I in my mind, I'm thinking, I could take an ammo can and put wood in it. It'd be just, I mean, right?
You'd think so.
No big deal.
I mean,
oh, no,
this
no,
is
yeah.
something.
Yeah. So anyway, we got it and we put it through its paces. And what this is a reinforced steel ammunition can with a burner that goes on top, but it's got a seal, it's got a top with a rubber seal on it. It's a rocket stove. You add wood to it. You light it, you know, with one of the spark, fire starters.
And folks, you can see here, I got one of the fire starters.
Easy
here.
Now, easy. I'm not gonna.
You just strike the.
Watch, cause.
I'm not gonna strike for sparks, cause you get scared with that. But
yeah.
This is a small fire starter. This is a 5,000 to 8,000 strike starter. But they have up to 20,000 strikes. And what you do is you get your kindling and, you know, you just use it to spark it, get it going, and it's easy as that, on the go, very portable, very user-friendly, clean, easy, and something that you can use for camping, for times when your electricity's out and you need to cook,
Go to MinutemanStove.com, MinutemanStove.com. Hear me? MinutemanStove.com or just HagmanHagman.com. Click on the link on the right-hand side. Please do that because you need this. We have it love it. And I don't like anything outside, okay? If you get me off pavement, I get nervous.
If you have storable food and you plan on, and Lane Miller, the owner, had come on our show and explained the benefits of having this in situations where, you know, people, if you're caught out in the wilderness, we'll say, and you need to set up a camp, you know, your first priority is to create a shelter for yourself. The second, immediately, is building a fire.
Right.
Now, it takes a lot of energy, a lot of firewood to keep a fire of any substantial size going. But this Minuteman rocket stove is very simple and does not take a lot.
Even I can do it.
Right.
And if I can do it, you can do it. Believe me. And any person that qualifies as a moron in terms of like, you can do it if I can do it.
Get a good fire going in there, and you can use the burner to cook anything from hamburger meat to warm up, you know, your American Survival Wholesale product line.
Yeah. Now, another announcement. I was talking to Steve Quayle, too, yesterday. Folks, what are you doing August 19th, 21st? Nothing.
August 19th?
August 19th, 20, and 21.
Well, that's when we'll be interviewing Jim Mars, but what's going on?
Okay, well, here's the deal. Gary Haven.
The Amerigen movie, right, as well as founder of Curves, and Christian.
Now, listen to this, okay, because I've been trying to work something out here. But, folks, listen carefully. Listen. You ready? Gary Haven, Tom Horn, Steve Quayle, and Pastor David Langford. Four people. Did you catch that? Gary Haven, Tom Horn, Steve Quayle, and Pastor David Langford. All in one place. They're going to be a featured guest at the Jim Baker Revival Preparedness and Survival Conference at Morningside Church. Now, here's what you got to do, all right? You've got to go to HagmanandHagman.com and click on the right-hand side, or HagmanReport.com. On the right-hand side, you're going to see the word revival in a box. Click on that. It'll take you to a page that will tell you about Gary Haven, Pastor Langford, Steve Quayle, Tom Horn, about what they're going to be talking about at the Morningside Church, the home of the Jim Baker Show. Okay? But you have to register. I don't believe it costs anything. You just have to register. Because, they write this. We need another great awakening, a fresh revival that puts us on our knees, brings us to repentance for our sins, turns our hearts back to worship and obey God. Every guest who we welcome on the Jim Baker Show speaks of this restoration and reviving the closeness and love of Jesus in our hearts and spirit. We need God back in our churches, our communities, and in our country. Join us at Morningside for a three-day revival. It's going to be 3 days, 19, 20, and 21. Okay, the schedule, 10 a.m. on Friday the 19th, and it ends at 10:30 a.m. with a church service on the 21st, on Sunday. Now, I'm not going to say anything more than this. You can check the schedule out, but you've got to RSVP. You've got to register for it, for this, because they will be turning people away from it for this. Don't be one of those people. If you just show up there and you don't have reservations, you're likely to be turned away. When I was talking to Steve Quayle, we were talking about Jim Baker and his ministry. I can't even tell you. I can't tell you. Seriously, I cannot tell you. I want to tell you, but I can't. Except to say that you're going to see some amazing things August 19th, 20, and 21 at the home of the Jim Baker Show, Morningside Church.
Last time Steve and Jim Baker and Pastor Langford got together, it was a fantastic show.
Right.
Last time Gary Haven, Steve, and Pastor Langford got together on the Jim Baker Show, it was a fantastic show. I can't imagine this being anything less, and with the addition of Tom Horn, not going to want to miss it. Jim Baker's also done some excellent interviews with Jonathan Cahn, author of The Harbinger.
This is not the Jim Baker of the 1980s.
Not at all.
Okay.
No. And we would be the first to, say so.
I don't have the, I want to tell you things, and I can't tell you things, except to say this is not the Jim Baker of the 1980s. This is,
And folks, you can go on YouTube, check out some of Jim Baker's latest work with different guests. There is things that are happening with the Jim Baker Show where he is adding a fresh perspective and a different insight with his ministry. He's helping a lot of people, as well as bringing a lot of people to the Lord through the guests he brings on and through the new ministry that he's launched. And a lot of times, like Jim Baker, some of us need to hit the bottom before we can, God will try us, like he says, more so than trying the fine gold in a furnace.
You know,
and it takes some people to go to that bottom before they can be used for God. It takes sometimes a man to be broken down completely to be built back up to be used for God.
Yeah.
No, that's what Jim Baker went through.
Yeah. In way more than people would even mm-hmm. imagine. If there was only one thing I could possibly go to this year, it'd be that. I mean, if somebody put a gun in my head and said, you know what, you got to cancel all your plans except one plan, I'd keep that one. And only because of the...
We don't know Jim personally, at least I don't, and a lot of people are, skeptical of, things that happened in the past.
Yeah.
But what I would ask everybody to do is, with an open heart, check out the fruit of his works and ask the Lord.
Joe, let me tell you something. There is absolutely...
I mean, people have a right to be timid and
I actually gave money to Jim Baker in the 80s, and I told him I wanted my money back. I did. I told him I wanted my money back.
Did he offer to give it back to you?
Yes.
I bet he did.
Yes. But see, it's a whole different ballgame now, and it's a whole different time, and it's a whole different scenario. And you toss in Tom Horn, Pastor Langford, Steve Quayle, Gary Haven into the mix. You've got integrity, character, and you've got power. I mean, power like you've never seen. And revival, 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 and that's what this is about. And this morning said, so please, okay, I know I spent a lot of time.
And we're talking about
this.
Spiritual power through these men and
yes.
their ministries and you know, Pastor Langford with his dedication to the Word and to preach the Word, whether it has been in churches that he has been the leadership of, to his newer ministries, voiceofevangelism.com, thevoiceofevangelism.com.
The voice of it.
The books that he's written. I mean, he is a man of God.
And you know Tom Horn.
Tom Horn.
My goodness.
He is a man of God. His ministry focuses more so on exposing the true meaning of what happened in history in order to explain what is going to continue to happen and play out in these times that we live in. And he's done a great job, and he's partnered up with some great people like Chris Putnam and Josh
and
Peck
Agnes.
And others. And what they're doing is bringing what so many of the denominational churches are not bringing, and that is the prophecy angle, as well as a biblically sound angle to people who would not have ever heard it before.
That's right.
Especially in that way. He's hitting the issues that mainstream pastors tend to avoid.
He really sat up and took notice, I guess, was the way to say it, when Steve was talking to him about the Nephilim and about Genesis 6 to the giants and such and about the end times. There's a lot there, and I'm just not going to get into it, but trust me on this one. Go. If you're near there, if you're even halfway considering going, go. But register right now, because there's a limited capacity. So that's going to be the place to be August 19th through the 21st. Lisa D writes that, just want another update here from Fox News. Apparently they're reporting that the shooter was Iranian and German dual citizenship. And yeah, he did yell Allahu Akbar. And so he shot the face
of babies,
of kids.
And this is that he is
clearly
targeting.
I want somebody from
children.
CARE. I want, targeting children. I want somebody from the Council on American Islamic Relations here to call in. If you're listening, have the balls to call in here, and you tell me that this is not Islam. This is Islam. And it sucks.
All right. Don't call, because we don't have the phone lines open.
I'll call so I can Here, I'll give you my,
but I
my
will
personal
put
office my, number.
Okay, I'll give that out.
No, don't. No.
555. We joke because the phone rings so much here. I mean, it's constant before the show, as soon as the show's over, and we joke about it.
We can't even. Seriously, we'll be on. I can't figure out how to disconnect caller call waiting, because honest to goodness, it's not like, you know. I mean, it's just constant. Yeah. Anyway. All right, five things, folks. Five things, five fast facts here about the Muslim population in Europe, which addresses what happened in Munich here. I want to just give you this information. And this is in the wake, this was brought out in the wake of the Paris attacks, as well as, well, the arrival of hundreds of thousands of mostly Muslim refugees in Europe. It's really drawn renewed attention to the continent's Muslim population. Now, in many European countries, you got France, you got Belgium, Germany, UK, Netherlands, there's this growing concern about Muslim communities, and that's led to call for restrictions on immigration. Sound familiar? Huh. Anyway, let's take a look really quick at how large Europe's Muslim population is, how fast it's growing. How are you able to put that stuff on that thing up there? How,
you
know, don't show
me
how.
How to learn PowerPoint?
Don't you have to do it now? But
what you gonna do? Really, what you want to put that picture up?
Talking, you know.
What are you going?
I'd like. I'd like that.
What
picture
you do is you save that picture, put it in a special file.
Hold on while I do.
Start
this.
A new slide and input that picture.
All I heard was blah blah blah.
Just forward that to the studio. I'll take care.
Okay. Here. Forward it to the studio. Okay. So I have to click that, right? Hang on. Okay, so... Yeah, Jeopardy music in the background, right? Okay, so you're going to take care of that one picture. See, it's this one right here. Okay. Those listening, we have, you know, you guys, I'm sorry, man. All right, so here's the deal. If you use Pew Research Center's most recent population estimates... Here are five things, five facts about the size and makeup of the Muslim population in Europe that are going to kind of really make your eyebrows raise a little bit. Germany and France, they've got the largest Muslim population among all the European Union member countries. So, Germany and France, in that order. Germany, okay, as of 2010 now, these figures are 6 years old, but still consistent with the percentage. There were 4.8 million Muslims in Germany, which is about 6% of the population of the country, and 4.7 million Muslims in France, and about 8% of the population. Now, in Europe overall, however, Russia's population of 14 million Muslims, 10%, is the largest on the continent. So the largest by percentage of population would be Russia. 14 million Muslims, 10%. But then you've got Germany and France at 6 and 8% respectively. Now think about that. 8% of the population are Muslim in France, and think of the Paris attacks and Nice attacks. All right, the Muslim share of Europe's total population has been increasing steadily. In recent decades, the Muslim share of the population throughout Europe grew about 1%, 1 percentage point per decade. From 4% in 1990 to 6% in 2010, and then 1% thereafter. Well, 1% during that period, and then I should say much rapid thereafter. The pattern is expected to increase well beyond 2030. Now, Muslims are younger than other Europeans. The median age, 32. All right. That's what I'm talking about right there in a graph.
What I'm going to do is, yeah, give me a second.
That's what I'm talking about in a graph, or in a, and that shows you the, you're making it smaller. How's that work?
Hold on.
That's what I'm talking about in terms of the population. But the average age of the Muslim in Europe is 32. The average age of Europeans, 40. By contrast, the median age of religiously unaffiliated people in Europe, including atheists and so on, was 37.
So Germany has the highest Muslim population, followed by France, United Kingdom, Italy, Bulgaria, Netherlands, Spain, Belgium. Those are the top eight.
Okay, that's by number, and then by percentage, it's the other
highest
around.
Is by percentage is Sweden, 25.3%. The second highest is Bulgaria, 13.7%. France has a 7.5 percentage, 6.0 percentage in the Netherlands, 7.5 in France. I said that already.
Well, yeah. See, the takeaway from this is this:
5.8.
All of this is really before the Syrian and Iran and even
this
Afghanistan.
Is before.
Yeah, this is as of 2010. You've got to understand. Boy, that really
stinks.
Okay. I don't think, unless you're a flat earther, probably doesn't make much sense. But okay, look, what we're seeing here is this deliberate distillation of our European culture, and it's happening here in the United States as well. And unfortunately, I don't have the figures here, but the Muslim demographics here in the United States, well beyond anything that we would have expected as of 1999, 2000. Because what took 10 years of immigration to accomplish, it's taken one. I guess that's all right. I mean, again, unless you're a flat earther. But anyway, so I would...
What? It's a flat screen. It's a flat map.
Well,
speaking of flat Earth,
okay, yeah, I okay,
no, I'm joking.
Look, here's the bottom line with this. We've got to do something about this alien invasion in the United States, and the only person I hear talking about it with any type of authority is Donald Trump. Now I know that he himself can't do this, but he's going to have to cause it to be done, and we're going to have a problem now. Because of Trudeau, not only will there be this Muslim immigration from the south, but also from the north, and especially from the north. Because our northern border is much more porous than our southern border, believe it or not. And just like our southern border, our northern border, the United States has specific points of entry where it's like in New England area, for example. It's well known that people can come right through without being molested by border patrol agents and what have you. So it's very important to understand that we in this country have been subjected to this alien immigration in order to rend the fabric of our society and our culture. That's the bottom line. And that also was the essence of the Pike-Mazzini deal, the letter of Albert Pike, and the essence of the asymmetrical warfare in which we are seeing as well. So just wanted to really bring that to your attention. Thank you so much, Susan, map of the European crisis. I'm going to send this to Eric. Maybe he can get it up on the studio because I can't. And it might be a little bit easier for you to do it, to see that. All right. Having said all of that, the... Again, we saw another sad day here with respect to the events in Munich, and expect this to come into the United States as well. Now, I don't know, and we need to address this a little bit. Did you get a chance to address this with Paul yesterday, where the caretaker, the black caretaker?
No, the military vet,
yeah,
who's 81 years old, who was held hostage for over four years,
but we can get his
benefit check stolen. For four years?
No, okay, I was thinking about the police shooting in Florida where the black guy...
No, we didn't talk about that, but Eric and I watched a video about that and read a few stories yesterday before the show. There was a black man...
Yeah, and Jim Morris was talking about this,
A mental health worker who was sitting outside with an autistic boy or a young man...
He was playing with
a toy truck, and apparently, allegedly, the cops say they got a call about an armed... man who was wanted to commit suicide. As the cops arrived on scene, the worker of the mental health facility, who was black, told the officers exactly what the situation was: that the kid was autistic, that it was a toy truck in his hand, not a gun. He laid on his back, put his hands in the air. Now, the videos of him being in the shot actually being fired are not there, but the police, for some reason, shot the unarmed black man who had his hands on the air and was laying on the back.
Kid.
Shot him in the leg. And when the man asked the police officer why he shot him,
why'd you shoot me?
The officer said, "I don't know." Which is disturbing.
Not only that, but the second officer was asked, "Why'd you shoot?" And he said, "I don't know."
And then I heard today they said one of the spokesmen of the police said that they were aiming for the autistic child and missed. But to the "I don't know,"
okay,
if the officer was sincere, which the gentleman who was shot seemed to believe he was, there could be a more spiritual aspect to this or something else going on.
Now, see, okay, I watched this, and my wife watched this. And
police are trained in a way, just like in the military, where, you know, in situations, there's a big difference when you have your gun out from your hand on the, your finger on the trigger to your finger on the trigger guard, right?
Or above the trigger,
right?
Yes.
You never put your finger on the trigger, and this is standard protocol for police officers. You never put your finger on the trigger until you've identified a threat that is clear and present. That's just simple gun safety. You know, you don't pull your gun out. You're not supposed to pull your gun out until there is a clear and present danger. Yet they were responding to a call where there was a man, allegedly a man with a gun, who wanted to commit suicide. So to come out with your and with everything going on in the country, with the violence against police, having your gun out down by your side, I guess, can be something that the officers did just as a precaution. But to aim the gun, to put it up at and aim it at a man who was laying backwards with his hand up, while having your finger on the trigger, when there was no danger being posed, when nobody was armed who they were dealing with, when the man was explaining and had explained himself to the police officers of exactly what was going on and why, it is unconscionable to think that that should have escalated into anything other than the police understanding that it was a false call and walking away. But now the taxpayers are going to have to foot the bill for the lawsuit after he wins it.
Yeah.
Which, you know, he, you know, good for him. Because
I don't know. I mean, okay, I was talking to Jim Mars about this, and he said, you know, you can't, it's inexplicable. The only word, you can't explain this. And he did say, you know, I kind of don't want to go here.
Yeah.
But he said, mind control, you know, we know that officers are sent out to Europe and to even Israel and train with Mossad, for example. He said, I really don't want to go there, but could it be some sort of even mind control use, which,
it is not out of the realm of possibilities. At the same time, it will not be proven, cannot be proven.
Because I can't imagine back in the 70s, for example. No way. That's all right, man. Oh, thanks. You got it up. All right. In a moment, folks, we're going to be joined by a picture. In a moment. Hang on. My marker's still up. My flag's still up. Okay. There we go. I remember back, and Jim and I were talking about this, and back in the 70s, he was a reporter that covered the beat, the cop beat, all right? And he rode along with the cops. And he said, it was a whole different ballgame back then than it was today. And I could relate to that because I, kind of the same thing in a different venue. But, he said, you cannot defend this behavior. You can't defend it. It's disturbing to me. And Renee said, boy, you know, my wife, she looked at it and she said, this is not right at all. I mean, there's something totally wrong with all this. I can't defend that. If it was me, I mean, Mike, seriously, thinking today, I don't think I would draw my firearm. I think I would probably walk toward that and try to, you know, see.
We took a concealed carry class and we learned basics of gun safety and how to unharness your weapon, where to hold it. But as a police officer, if there's no clear and present danger, having your gun out on your side is fine. pointing it with your finger on the trigger when there is no weapon in sight, when there is no immediate danger to anybody around you or those you are sworn to protect.
Well, and I asked Jim Morris, I said, what do you think the answer is? He said, why don't we have civilian review boards that truly represent a swath of the population and that are, you know, acting independent of anything else, and certainly not run like a grand jury would be, because you know we know how grand juries are, but as transparent as a civilian review board, and I totally agree with that. I think that might be an answer, not to witch hunt police officers, because we are very pro law enforcement here. We believe that I believe that the majority of law enforcement officers are especially the older ones are well-intentioned, they're constitutionally minded, many are oath keepers. But there's this element out there that's a growing element, especially among the federal forces, that are just off the reservation. But we need to address this. We really do. But then again, Black Lives Matter, Nation of Islam, the Muslims, the different various groups that are putting targets on police officers' back. No, no, no. That's why we said, you know, do something nice, buy a cup of coffee for a police officer, do something, you know, let them know that you care, because they're on the, I mean, look, folks, if we get through this weekend without seeing another ambush, I'll be happy. I really will. And I suspect an ambush any time, Baltimore area, Washington. And watch, by the way, watch the DNC this week, and many will say, well, nothing happened at the RNC. Well, did you hear about, you know, the issues of police being touched by substances and having their arms go numb? There was a couple instances of that. Possible syringe attacks at the RNC against police officers. I don't know how many people heard that. But, but there's a lot of stuff going on here.
Yes, there is.
You know what? Hang on a second here while I get ready. Susan with Paul McGuire sent a graphic.
Okay, and I want to cover this before while you're getting that.
Right,
the Hillary ahead. Clinton has chosen a vice presidential candidate.
Yeah.
Tim Kaine.
Not to be confused with Herman Cain.
He,
Tom McCann.
Yeah, he is now a 58-year-old Democratic U.S. Senator from Virginia. And this whole thing is pretty interesting when you look at his history, both politically and this article paints him as some kind of saint, as they talk about his career starting in 1984 in his legal career, working pro bono cases representing a black woman who had been turned away from her apartment. The landlord told her he'd already rented it out, and basically they go on to say how he saved this woman's life, and he is a moderate progressive who is...
I know, moderate progressive. What the hell's that?
Seriously. But they say he's the perfect fit for her, and they are also wondering why Elizabeth Warren, you know, isn't really considered. But apparently,
too much estrogen in the room there.
It is going to be this Tim Kaine, and folks are going to start to need to dig up the information on Mr. Kaine.
Well, why? I mean, look at Hillary. Do you think it's going to matter if Tim Kaine could have sacrificed and drowned a barrel of puppies in his front yard? And Hillary, it wouldn't matter. Hillary Clinton
exactly.
Has done worse. And who? I mean, no one cares.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a lot more behind Kaine than what has initially been put out. And I would urge people to start looking into this. Also, on the Hillary Clinton election news, WikiLeaks, has released more emails showing collusion between the DNC, collaborating with CBS, working poll data against Bernie Sanders. Earlier today, WikiLeaks released more documents showing that the Democratic National Committee specifically worked to destroy the candidacy of Bernie Sanders in a united effort with the media to support Hillary Clinton. As the article says, the revelations within the release are quite astounding and unfortunately confirm all the prior suspicions of the Bernie Sanders supporters about the Democratic Party apparatus working with the Clinton campaign to eliminate the threat posed by Sanders. And he has a legitimate beef. Well, they basically determined her the nominee before the election started. One of the major media news outlets colluding with a political candidate to sabotage her opponent. Not by exposing the deeds of Sanders or the policies, but colluding in a way to underhand him, including in a way to manipulate poll data to show her being more favorably liked among the voters in different states.
It's all an illusion.
Exactly. To give the illusion that, you know, vote for Hillary because a vote for Sanders would be a lost cause. When in reality, if you look at the numbers that were actually being done throughout the primary, Bernie Sanders actually polled much better than Donald Trump did versus how Hillary Clinton polls versus Trump.
That's not an endorsement.
No,
that's just a
not
fact.
At all. It's a fact.
It's been shown. Regardless, it just shows the collusion of major media
and the point of that is
political machinery.
The Democratic Party was not interested in nominating the best candidate for the job.
Or in charge of fulfilling. Not the best candidate, the most popular.
The most popular, the best chance to win.
By polls. No.
Right.
They manipulated the polls just to favor Clinton.
And even before Bernie Sanders, and the primary season with Hillary and Bernie started, they had already decided that Clinton was the nominee and they were going to work toward that end, as the emails show. But will that be a devastating blow to the campaign of the Clinton and knock her back in points? Absolutely not. Because I'm sure in all the headlines and all the liberal progressive talking heads, it'll be Donald Trump's fault or somebody else's for that matter, you know, as the narrative has been since her campaign started. It's everybody else's fault.
I don't care what TV network you watch. You were subject to programming with a capital P.
Like NBC, what they said, and CNN. Van Jones was on CNN during the Trump speech last night.
Yeah.
He called it a dark speech from a vengeful demagogue.
And I like that. I mean, I don't like that as applied to it. I just like that dark speech from a vengeful demagogue.
And three networks on Thursday night immediately decried Donald Trump's dark speech as one coming from a vengeful demagogue. On NBC, Tom Brokaw allowed that some will see Trump on a white horse who will lead them to some kind of sanctuary and then pull the drawbridge up, but sneered, others looking in are going to see someone they will only think is a demagogue of some kind. Chuck Todd said, I think it's an extraordinarily dark speech. We are now represented as a party by a man who believes in protectionism, isolationism.
Wait a second. Okay. In the wake of Nice, in the wake of Munich now, okay, in the wake of Baton Rouge, in the wake of Dallas, in the wake of everything else in between and before, does the media want him to stand up and say, you know, we're going to continue the policies of Barry Satoro and Hillary the Witch Clinton because it worked out so well?
This is what George Stephanopoulos said. We have heard about scraping the trade agreements. We heard about stopping immigration from terrorist countries. He painted a dark picture of where America stands today.
Oh.
And Martha,
so maybe it's a
pretty dark speech labeled Hillary Clinton the candidate of death, destruction, and terrorism, and weakness and massive lawlessness. She says, "Yeah, if America is not scared for their safety before tonight, they are tonight." He talked about the crime, lawlessness, economic catastrophe. He is the law and order candidate, he said, and basically his message is only if he can save America. And this goes right up to what the majority of Americans are worried about, crime. So, they're worried about terrorism. And another commenter, Terry Morin.
I want every person out there who's accused Steve Quayle, who's accused Doug Hagman and Joe Hagman, who's accused Rick Wiles of doom porn, of selling doom porn. I want them to pick up the mantle and say, hey, Trump, you know, that's exactly what Trump is doing. I want them, see, this is truth. This is information. This is reality. And they're trying to paint some rosy picture of puppy dogs and rainbows when it doesn't exist. When Muslims are taking weapons and shooting children and cutting children's heads off, other Muslims are cutting Muslims, other people's heads off. Young children Muslims are cutting people's heads off. There's mass executions everywhere. The police are targets everywhere by the Black Panthers, by the Nation of Islam, by these commie pinko freaks who set out to burn flags and end up, you know, hey, stupid, you're on fire. Hey, stupid, these people are so stupid. These communists are so ignorant, and they're you know, hey, a cop had to yell, hey, stupid, you're on fire when that idiot was trying to burn the American flag at the RNC. Hey, dummy, you know, you're on fire. Okay. So yeah, it's really rosy, Rachel Maddow. It's really rosy, Chuck Todd. Oh,
Rachel Maddow.
Okay, it's really, everything's really rosy. Everything's really great. What a bunch of morons!
Oh, it is, and their liberal utopian minds and their global governance vision.
Go back and live in your freaking container, your freight container. Okay, of 450 square foot, and raise your Gonzo beans or whatever. Or yeah, get the hell out of here. Go to Venezuela if you think it's so great.
Everybody, you know, they want to change the laws. They want to remove the Constitution. They want to remove the limits on government and further restrict the rights of citizens. Yet. We are the problem for standing on what the foundation of this country was.
Right.
And Tom Brokaw says about Donald Trump's speech, well, these are the themes that got him to where he is. This is the unlikely journey, but tonight he delivered it on steroids. People in this hall see him as a man on a white horse who will lead them to some kind of sanctuary, then pull the drawbridge behind him. And he goes on to say, others look at him as some kind of demagogue. What you talked about, he kept talking back. The theme, taking back the themes, we're going to win, we're going to crack down on terror, crack down on law and order, and Hillary Clinton until she took office as Secretary of State. The Middle East was a land of milk and honey until she raised her hands and accepted that office. That will be a very hard sell, but obviously he has teed up who he wants to. I've been doing this for a long time. I have never witnessed somebody who comes from where he did, got to this place, and used the language that he has to run for president of the United States. You could not understand, however, we are playing by different rules now. Social media, his fans in the social media will be all over this tonight and help promote Donald Trump. And it's just crazy. Charlie Rose, well, we heard a list of grievances we've heard before. It was a long speech at one speed tied together by two words, law and order. I can't fix the system. I will make it better. I am your voice. I'm the one with little appeal to the better agenda.
Yeah.
I mean, and then Rachel Maddow, like I said about the buttons, Rachel Maddow warns MSNBC viewers that Clinton-related segment may make them uncomfortable. And why would it make them uncomfortable? Anti-Hillary Clinton buttons. Rachel Maddow said, I want to show you a little something that we shot earlier today, Maddow said Wednesday night. You may find it uncomfortable, and you may not want to look at this stuff.
See,
what that clip jumped to is an image of the Clinton theme buttons being hawked by merchandisers at RNC. What they say, Hillary for prison.
Prison, yeah. Might make you feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
What does that even mean? Are we six? Are we 8 years old? Are we in the first grade or the second grade playground? Jimmy said something really, really nasty about me, and my feelings are hurt. So either I'm going to have to sue you
or
put a warning up there. Or
yeah.
PTSD, you know, come on.
Social justice warriors. And that's what the Tim Kaine, the vice presidential nominee for Hillary, has also labeled himself as a social justice warrior.
A social justice warrior.
Yep.
Well, Kane's got some issues. Of course, he quit law school back in the 80s and went to Honduras to be a missionary. You know, the left, the progressive, the that ticket is going to paint him up to be this wonderful philanthropist. But look into it. In fact, we'll have a report on him next week.
And if you want to see an example of how the media takes a story and how it uses the distorted facts and spins them to make it show that it's an advantage to them or makes an advantage to them. This is from yesterday. White House. No president has been more committed to border security than Obama. Now, how can they get away with saying this? No president, that Obama is more committed to border security than any other president in history because of the lower number of illegal immigrants apprehended at the border during his time in office. They say there's never been a greater commitment to border security, and that's reflected in the numbers that we see of individuals who are apprehended attempting to cross the border, Press Secretary Josh Earnest said Thursday. Well, guess what? They have the lowest percentage of apprehensions at the border because they're not apprehending anybody. The Border Patrol has stand down orders and they let everybody and anybody in.
That's right. It
makes no sense.
Makes absolutely. Well, it does if you look at
exactly.
it through the eyes of a perpetrator.
And this is the
criminal cabal there.
This is one of the little templates they use on how to distort facts and sway public opinion through deception and through misleading. Just like they run around and tout the national debt or the health insurance information, all of which is a nightmare. But Obama cut the national debt in half, if you hear it from his own lips. It's just pure insanity and hypocrisy.
The Associated Press had talked about how Donald Trump used code words, if you will.
For
coded race language, basically. You know what? I was going to get into this. I'm not going to do this only because it's really ridiculous. The real issue here is not these alleged code words, the racist code words, code language, coded race languages cited by the Associated Press by Donald Trump. What we really need to be looking at is the coded language that is used to advance the communist agenda here across the United States and across the Western world. All right. While the AP will look at this shift to coded race language as if Trump is saying he's talking and kind of hiding, embedding racial epithets in his speech. Instead of really focusing on that, what we should be focusing on is the programming that we are all being subjected to by the networks, by the language police, by the people, by Facebook, by Twitter. You know, yeah. I don't agree with the motto from Breitbart in terms of his, obviously not his sexuality. I don't agree with sexuality. I don't agree with his, but he's got a right to be.
Some of his methods are
I don't
out
agree
there.
With him. Okay. But
I'm starting to like him more and more each day. I mean, because he's right and so much of what
correct.
He says.
Right. Right. But. Okay, I mean, in case you folks,
he was banned. Yeah, he's the editor for Breitbart.
He's a homosexual, a very self-proclaimed and very vocal homosexual
conservative
homosexual. Now you can be a conservative homosexual. Now you can't be a Christian conservative homosexual, but you can be a conservative. Anyway, go on.
He was banned for life from Twitter. Right. And if you folks, a really great summation of what happened with Milo, if you go to Paul Joseph Watson's YouTube channel,
right.
He lays all the evidence out. It started between a feud between Milo and the
new
Ghostbuster movie actress Leslie Jones.
I don't know.
I believe.
Is she black?
Yes. And, right. You know, he wrote a review about the movie, and which started
he hurt my feelings. He said I was a bad actress. Is that something like that? Or
yeah,
what?
No, he said how terrible the movie was and how, you know, it was a feminist creation, and he laid this out in a number of different points he made, you know, why he thinks that way.
See, but, okay, yeah, I'm glad you mentioned
it. From the old Ghostbusters to the Newsbusters, he talks about how the first Ghostbusters, you know, they were against the government was against them, and the EPA tried to come and shut them down, and, you know, they defied the government order, save the city and whatnot. Uh-huh, now this one, the government, you know, they take in the Ghostbusters and start to pay them, almost like the
this
government
stuff
will
really
take
matters,
care of you.
Folks.
And anyway, this Jones, this comedian, has been on Twitter responding to unkind comments and criticisms about her movie by sicking other Twitter members on the people who disagree with her by saying, I'll you know, show you hate. Get her is one of the tweets that she wrote in response to
get her?
Yeah, telling her Twitter followers to get the person who was talking bad about her or making bad comments about her.
Okay, you lost me, but that's all right.
So this is a person who is inciting another other people to harass and tear down a Twitter person who made a comment on her. One of her tweets.
All right, so
Milo,
okay,
Milo,
gotcha.
Whatever,
Milo,
Milo,
or Milo. Milo sounds like it's from he's from Meepos. But
said
right.
something along the lines yeah. of, you know, rejected by another black dude. And your tweets are barely literate. He was banned from Twitter
for life.
For life.
Right.
Over what they say was a harassment and hate speech. Meanwhile,
see
the person who had him blocked initially, the Jones, is somebody who was guilty of harassment and inciting others to commit acts of harassment and attacking others verbally on Twitter.
You see, okay, and the point is,
and he said it best himself. He's been turned into a free speech martyr,
right?
And it shows the hypocrisy of the left and how they are now, you know, the word police and.
And this is what we should be paying attention to, not because of it. Not
because it sets precedent.
Right. And this is how they're going to win the war if we let them. And I say if we let them. This is how these communist, Muslim, Luciferians, I guess, would cover it. This is how they are going to win the war if we let them. If we don't say enough. You know, we could tell them to stick Twitter right up there where the sun don't shine, basically, and Facebook and all the social networking. And that's, and maybe scene.life is an alternative. I don't know. I'm checking that out. But the fact of the matter is, they are coming after us. Because see, it's not about us being allowed to say something, or it's not about tolerance. It's about you either agree with me or shut up, or
exactly.
I'm gonna have you shut down.
Of tolerance that we see, and the point that
Milo is probably gonna get sued for. I'll bet you some $10 million.
Thousands
because
of Twitter
she
pages,
somebody's feelings, right?
Thousands of Twitter pages and thousands of Facebook pages dedicated to, with the message "Kill Donald Trump."
Right.
None of these are censored.
That's okay.
ISIS uses Twitter as well as Facebook.
I'm going to show
to promote and to celebrate their atrocities that they commit. No censorship whatsoever. But one guy who goes against the mold, who has the ability to speak out in a way that he can articulate himself, that the left has no arguments to be able to destroy him.
Yes.
He has a very thick skin. He jokes around a lot and doesn't care what people say about him, so they can't hurt him with words. His words are dangerous because they expose the truth and hypocrisy of the left. Therefore, their only option is to ban him because they don't know how else to demarginalize him, demoralize him.
And that's the way these little morons on the left operate. Mm-hmm. I got to stop using that word because it's losing its meaning.
Moron.
But that's how these Luciferians operate. What they do is if they can't beat you intellectually, they shut you up through complaining to Twitter the heads of Twitter who are sympathetic to your causes, or they'll file some lawsuit in some court somewhere
right.
in an attempt to shut you up or to bankrupt you. And see, that's what the problem is in this country. And everyone better pay attention, because you're going to be on the other end of this. If you stand up for what's true and what's right, and if you say, look, I am a Christian conservative, and I believe in Jesus Christ, and I believe this is the way to go, then you are the one with the target on your back, and you're going to feel feel worse than what this Milo guy felt in terms of being censored. We're all going to be censored, but we better be prepared to deal with this. Preparation to deal with what's coming, folks. And it is coming, folks. I got to tell you, I have a bad feeling about in the next week or so. We have let's watch carefully. And last time I said this, it was Baton Rouge. We got more to come. And if that does happen, watch our website. We're going to bring to the airwaves, be to the airwaves. But last Baton Rouge, we had to kind of wait and see what happened. We have assets in place to bring you information. Should something like that happen again here in the United States over the weekend, we'll be on there. So,
folks, thanks for the great week. Monday, Steve Quayle, Dave Hodges. Not going to want to miss it. Next Thursday, we'll be with Pastor Paul Begley in Noblesville, Indiana. Check out Pastor Paul Begley, prophecy.com, and HagmanandHagman.com. Right. You can register to be part of our live studio audience.
Have a good night, everyone. Good weekend.
This is the Global Star Radio Network.